I invite you to join me.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh, yeah.
Don't you know we're going to have a Solartopia.
Too many things we found. That's the great Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger, the legendary Pete Seeger, and David Burns, who wrote the words to that song, except for one, Solartopia, which I wrote. I'm Harvey Sluggo Wasserman. Glad to be back with you. Another Green Power and Wellness show here at PRN, thanks to the crew in New York. And thank you, John Brakey, for joining us. Happy to have you with us. We're going to talk about, we're going to be joined by Steve Rosenfeld and another guest. And who's our other guest, John? I can't remember her name right now.
Susan Pinchon. How are
Susan
you doing, Harvey?
Pinchon. All right, there we go.
Yeah, very well-known activist. Her and me go back many, many years, and we've joined forces.
And we got Steve,
Steve
Rosenfeld. You with us? Or Susan, you with us. We got another guest, right? So far, it's just you, John. Okay, so listen.
No, Susan's on us. Susan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay, great. Susan Pinchon, John Brakey, and we're Steve Rosenfeld. Have you joined us yet? I know Steve was having a dental emergency today, so we'll see if he makes it. I'm looking here at the New York Times, an op-ed by Stacey Abrams, who's become a great hero, of course. And the opening line on this is State Line to Atlanta. This is today in the New York Times. We cannot resign ourselves to dismay and disenfranchisement by Stacey Abrams, who was the successful gubernatorial candidate in Georgia and had the election stolen by the Ku Klux Klan Secretary of State, who's now running wild over the state, as will they do. But here's the opening paragraph of Stacey Abrams' op-ed in today's New York Times. Quote, in the mid-1960s, when my father was a teenager, he was arrested. His crime? Registering black voters in Mississippi. He and my mother had joined the civil rights movement well before they were even old enough to vote themselves. They braved this dangerous work, which all too often created martyrs of marchers. In doing so, my parents ingrained their six children a deep and permanent reverence for the franchise. We were taught that the right to vote undergirds all other rights, that free and fair elections are necessary for social progress. That's why I'm determined to end voter suppression and empower all people to participate in our democracy. Now, John Brakey and Susan and Steve Rosenfeld, when you join us, this is a pretty strong statement. I don't think I've ever opened a show, actually, by reading that much of a quote from someone else. Stacey Abrams is quite a woman, very, very important in our attempt to reinstate or to preserve some kind of democracy in this country, facing a fascist dictator who's now about to get us into a war, which is right on time, by the way. If you'll remember, in 2003, George W. Bush was way down in the polls. Nobody thought he'd get a second term. I never, by the way, say that George W. Bush ran for re-election because he wasn't elected in the first place. But nonetheless, and right on time, in 2003, Karl Rove announced that the United States has never thrown out a war president. And lo and behold, we had the war in Iraq and the rest. It's some pretty ugly history, actually. So now we're facing, Donald Trump is quoted today in the New York Times as saying that he's told his generals that he does not want a war with Iran, but I don't believe that for a nanosecond. We will be in a war when the next election comes, and we may be reacquainted with the Espionage and Sedition Acts, which essentially give the president full dictatorial power to arrest and imprison anyone he or she wants to. John Adams used it in the 1790s to imprison a journalist named James Callender, who was writing stuff Adams didn't like. And he also imprisoned Ben Franklin's grandson for the same reason. So we can expect some really bad stuff coming up. And I think war is pretty much a given here. What Stacey Abrams is talking about here is what you, Susan, and John Brakey specialize in, which is the franchise. And what has been done to the vote in this country, we have had in the 21st century, we've had five elections, three of them stolen to 2000. And I'm waiting. I want Al Gore to apologize to Ralph Nader. That's another story. And then 2004, John Kerry was showed by me and Bob Fitrakis 30 different ways that the 2004 election was stolen, and John Kerry did nothing. And in 2016, at very least, we know that Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania were, shall we say, had irregularities, and we're still waiting for Hillary Clinton to say something about that. And in fact, all that Hillary Clinton has said is to attack Jill Stein, who had the courage and the wisdom to go into Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and challenge what went on there, and with no help whatsoever from the Democrats. Now, with 2020 coming up and everybody really, really, who cares, really, really frightened, we've got some serious work to do. So John Brakey and Susan Pinchon, you have been in the front lines of dealing with this. John, I know you're in North Carolina right now. You want to start? And Susan, where are you? I know you're both from Maine, but where, Hi. Susan Pinchon, where are you right now?
I'm in Florida. I've been here the last 20 years.
Oh, my God. Okay. You've been there since Jeb Bush stole the election for his brother, right?
Yes, that's right.
All right. So let's start with John Brakey. We're waiting for Steve Rosenfeld. If he comes on, please announce him.
Yeah.
Oh, Steve, you're here.
Yeah.
You are here.
Yeah.
Okay. So listen, John and Susan, I agreed with Steve earlier. He's got things he has to do, but there was a couple of things he wanted to say. We have a full hour. So Steve Rosenfeld, and you of course know John. I don't know if you and Susan Pinchon are acquainted, but you had some things you wanted to report on about election theft and what's happening with the votes leading up to 2020. And of course you'll be back on the show again, but tell us today what you've got today, and then we'll let you go.
Well, it's just a start, and then I'm sure Susan can pick it up. You know, people may have heard that that there were two counties in Florida that the FBI said had been hacked in 2016.
And the governor, the governor has come out and said that too.
Yes, but he won't release who
they are. Show. He's quoted in the New York Times as admitting that two counties were hacked, but he's not been more specific.
Okay, so here's what I can tell you that's a little different than what most people have been saying. And Susan could probably really add on to this. You know, the people are assuming that because it went through this one contractor called VR Systems, standing for Voter Registration Systems, that it was just a voter registration database in those counties, which is linked to the state. So that's, you know, voters' addresses, and it's their party affiliation, and there might be some, it might be tied to their driver's license or social security number. But I talked to a guy, I think you've had on the show before, the former Leon County Supervisor of Elections, Ian Sancho.
Ian Sancho, yeah.
Yeah, so what Ian said was he helped VR Systems get started. They were created by a British couple who, back in the 80s, they wanted to create a Windows-based voter registration software and system, because back then it was using, like, MDOS or something that nobody knows what it is anymore, but that's what it was. So they did that by spending a month in his county office and figuring out everything that was needed. The rest of that everything is not just voter registration information. So that's the point that he was making, is that what was accessed was basically, you know, all the poll worker recruitments and all the deep logistical details that are used by election officials to create and stage an election. So if you think about, you know, the threats to elections, I mean, the simplest way I can put it is you can either disrupt the process or corrupt the results. So, you know, most people hear about the disruption part. It's very hard to prove the corruption part. But in terms of, you know, scenarios of what can go wrong and drive people crazy and create chaos, it's not just access to voter registration records. It's access to the whole logistical thing. And that's what I wanted to tell you about.
So, okay, so do we know who did this, this hack?
Well, I think the assumption is that it was Russian intelligence, because it came through the Mueller report. Now, people will say
so that's where this information has come from. Did somebody read underneath the redacted magic marker thing, or was this actually in the report?
The Mueller report is very interesting, because it talks about a lot of places where things were compromised. And it's more detailed than people think, even though it doesn't like list specific stuff. So for example, you know, I'll give you like one example. So like, you know, we know that, you know, Hillary Clinton's emails and the Clinton campaign's emails and the Democratic National Committee's emails were all hacked. But the Mueller report says that it wasn't just, you know, email servers. It was basically the cloud computer that held these files. So that's really interesting. Yeah, because it shows you that it's like a deeper and more sophisticated level of you know, penetration. And so the thing about this VR systems thing is, you know, what we've been told is that, you know, some local employee at a rural county, and you know, I think the Tampa Tribune said that they think it's one of two small rural counties, answered an email. And that's somehow that was the way to sort of like get inside these systems. But what is the system they got inside of? And what I'm trying to tell you is, as best I was told, and I'll just leave it here, is that it's not just voter registration records where you can just have somebody show up and say, oh, why am I not, you know, on the polling place list, or why didn't I get my ballot? It's all this potential other logistical stuff that has to do with staging an election. So that, to me, that's really interesting. Because, like I said, you know, the whole thing about what can go wrong falls under the disrupt or corrupt umbrella. And, boy, you have access to information like that, you can really disrupt.
Wow. And
Did Ion give any clue, Steve, about what counties he thinks it is?
No. But I just read something online where, I mean, you know, you just don't know. But what did I read? Let me just find it. I just had it here. Maybe you saw it. The Tampa Bay Times basically said they contacted 67 counties, and two of them didn't write back or respond, and that was Gadsden and Hardy. And they didn't say that it proved anything. It just said it made it sound suspicious, like those were the ones. So I think those are pretty rural counties.
So we're here with Steve Rosenfeld, Susan Pinchon, and John Brakey, three of the top experts in the hacking of our elections. I read this story somewhere about that the governor of Florida had come forward and confirmed that two counties in Florida had been hacked during the 2016 election, but I didn't realize that information came from the Mueller report.
Well, it was in the Mueller report, yeah. So Susan,
The Mueller report mentioned one county and said that the Mueller never pursued it. That was information they had received from the FBI. Then the governor of Florida elaborated more and said it was two counties. And there was a very funny article in the New York Times, I think yesterday, where they quoted him saying that when he found out that it was necessary for the public to find out, I'm paraphrasing, and that as soon as he found out that it would become public information, then he found out, had to sign a non-disclosure agreement, And then he was backtracking like crazy and waffling about why it was not a good idea to say anything and to tell, because he said something about it would help the invaders, the intruders, if he revealed that.
The governor said all this?
Yes, the governor said all that, yeah. In the New York Times.
So he's really dancing all over the place here.
Yes, he completely did a 180 from saying he would immediately disclose it to not disclosing it at all. So,
oh my God! I mean, so the point is that this is serious stuff. Obviously, now how deep do we don't really know then, having not seen the Mueller report, we don't know how deep into the actual on the ground hacking of the Florida election in 2016. I assume this is 2016, not 2018. We don't know what Mueller may or may not have found out about how deep the Russians went into the 2016 election in Florida. We just know that they do. Now, we know also that they hacked two county databases in Illinois as well.
And Arizona, John Brakey. You know, if you remember, that's why I filed a lawsuit right. in 2016 in Arizona after the primary. That's where I met Chris Sauter, our lawyer, because we had proof that there was something wrong in the voter database, and people in a close primary who were Democrats in some cases were dropped off the rolls or had their party affiliations, and it was just a huge problems on election day in Arizona. And then we brought in Doug Jones to testify, who's one of the leading scientists in the country who understands elections and especially the voter database, and was warning about the dangers in the voter database because how they set these things up using wireless setups to go ahead and get voters. And that's the big fear that I have in 2020. One of them is that this system could be put under stress and fail, and the system would become overloaded and couldn't handle it.
Well, here's my prediction for 2020, and I think the three of you are familiar with what I'm going to say. Basically, we can expect that whoever the Democrat is, he or she will win the popular vote. I don't see any way that doesn't happen. But then there will be chaos in the states that Trump's people have added up the electoral votes and figured out that if they again lose the popular vote, they can again carry the electoral college. Likely suspects, of course, would again be Michigan and Wisconsin, although they now have Democratic governors, Arizona, Nevada, New Hampshire, states that are going to be swing states and that with conveniently enough electoral votes to put Trump back in a position then of really becoming a dictator with four more years, and that they will there will be chaos in those states. There will be hacked vote counts, and that's how Trump will get his next 40 years in the White House. So and this is all a precursor to that. Now, I had read there has been widespread recognition that something happened to some databases in Illinois. John, you have raised, and I have not seen it in other media, that there were problems in Arizona. And this is, to my knowledge, is the first direct reporting of that there was disruption in Florida. Am I correct with that?
No. The FBI, actually, there were reports earlier, and yeah. There was a lawsuit filed immediately after the 2016 election. We had figured out it was VR Systems that was hacked. An attorney who was in Lee County, I have an affidavit in front of me that she had submitted for part of that lawsuit, and she and a couple other attorneys there estimated that one out of three voters in Lee County were sent to the wrong polling place on Election Day.
And then denied the vote?
It was just totally confusing. The poll workers were going crazy. People were showing up at the wrong precincts. Apparently, the voter registration ID cards had been printed improperly with the wrong precinct numbers on them. And then in Broward County, which is, if you all are familiar with Broward County, has become somewhat infamous over the past couple of years because of all the problems there. But the same attorney was also monitoring Broward County, and she said the poll workers there were going crazy. She saw all these notations in capital letters and exclamation points that people were being told they were not registered when they were registered.
So were they then given provisional ballots, or were they sent away? What
happened? I'll just read her summary. If it's okay, Harvey, I'll just read her summary, two sentences. She says, in summary, I am of the opinion that there were serious systemic problems with the Florida voter database. The high frequency of the types of incidents I have described above leads me to believe that there was either a massive voter database corruption or, more importantly, possible intentional voter database manipulation, either through state-maintained computers or through a third-party vendor database contracted to manage the database. And this is a very solid attorney. She had witnessed, you know, observed many elections before this one. So that's a very strong statement by her.
And that's consistent with what Ian was telling me, Ian Sancho, about what VR systems, you know, it's not just voter registration data. It's basically, you know, election logistics. Now, you can't, now we can't prove anything here, but and this is the whole thing, you know. You can see the results of disruption. It's very hard to prove corruption. But this is consistent with what Susan is saying and what I was told, you know, and what Ian is saying, because it's not just the, you know, the information people fill out on a voter registration form and then what's hidden, which is their driver's license or, in some cases, Social Security number. It's the other logistical stuff. So there you go.
Right. So, even the scenario I laid out at the top here,
because this, I'd like your, this is why we're doing this. This is why we're talking here. We have had clear indication of Russian. I mean, you know, a lot of people on the left are yelling that this whole Russian thing is a diversion. To take us away from the real issue. Well, here's the real issue, and then I'd like, Steve, you can start if you need to leave, and then Susan and then John, to tell me. The ability to disrupt an election on a precinct and by precinct and state-by-state basis has been very well proven. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt that anybody, that these guys can do this. They did it in Florida 2000. They did it in Ohio 2004. They did it in all over the country in 2016. And what we're seeing now is that the Russians are really involved, but of course others are involved as well. And the proof now that we have at least three databases that have been hacked, or three states with hacked databases in Arizona, Illinois, and Florida now, and I'm sure more will come up, and maybe there's even more in the Mueller report, which sooner or later I think we're going to see. But nonetheless, Steve Rosenfeld, is this the precursor to what we can expect in 2020, and how do we deal with it?
Well, I don't know that. I can't answer that really clearly. All I can say is that states have very widely varying capacities to deal with. And it's not just states, it's county election offices mostly, widely varying capacities to deal with these kinds of disruptions. And, you know, one of the reasons that, you know, the thing that kind of unites what I'm covering as a reporter and what John and Susan are doing as activists is, you know, we are all in our sort of, from our separate perspectives, trying to take a look at what is the available evidence trail to confirm or legitimize the results. And what you get what I see when looking at these different potential swing states is the timelines and the schedules and the opportunities between election night and when results are official or certified is it really varies, and it does not give much breathing room at all. to lend transparency and legitimacy. So, you know, these, so, you know, it's the whole arc, all the steps along the way, each step is a silo of potential real complexity. The poll workers aren't trained. The registration, you know, stuff is there. People go to the wrong place. And then come election day, you know, what gets counted? And after election day, what gets verified? And then where the lawyers come in, where they don't come in, and then how the clock is run out, and where is the public left? And, you know, this whole spectrum, when you step back from those details, is it's not very encouraging.
Yeah. Well, okay, Susan.
Oh, gosh. And John has such exciting stuff to report from North Carolina, so we want to get to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, so let me just leave it there.
But you've already said it, because what Steve said is exactly right, okay? That we have election departments out there that are with good people trying to do their best sometimes, but they don't understand the technology. They don't understand how true transparency should work. You know, it's very disappointing to see people who learned how to, you know, shovel dirt behind their back, if I could say it that way or whatever. But I'm rambling. So go ahead, Susan.
No, that's correct. And
well, the question is, what can we do
about
it?
And Harvey, by the way, it's 39 states that the Russians attempted, or somebody attempted to breach. And that's a Bloomberg report. That's New York Times. So
39 states.
Russian campaign hit 39 states, twice as many as originally reported. And in one case, this was an older report I just pulled up. In one case, hackers tried to delete and alter voter data. Well, now we know that they were probably successful in more than one instance. But so this is an older report. But those were the attempts, 39 states. So imagine what we're going to be up against in 2020. Can't even imagine. And we have a president that is ignoring this. You know, what do you guys think about this? If our country had been physically attacked, if someone had set a bomb off in Trump's rival's hotel, let's just say his rival owned a hotel, and someone had set a bomb off in that hotel, and the president was ignoring it and saying it never happened, that would be a huge risk to our national security. But here we have a president who is essentially denying that this attack has happened on our country. And I just find that startling. Do you, Will?
Well, no, I find it completely predictable.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I think it's completely predictable. This is a fascist coup d'etat we're seeing unfolding. It's completely consistent with everything that these people have done, dating all the way back to 1988, when George H.W. Bush essentially stole the presidential nomination from Bob Dole in New Hampshire and with the first electronic voting machines. To me, it's totally consistent. This is a fascist coup d'etat being conducted with the manipulation and theft of our elections. And what's amazing is that the Democrats have done absolutely nothing about it.
Well, that's amazing.
That is amazing. I mean, if it was any kind of physical attack and our nation's leader was ignoring it, it does seem treasonous, doesn't it? You're ignoring a nation state attack on our country, and it's pretty extraordinary. But that was a bit of a diversion, but
that's the heart of the matter here. I mean, we'll get to the other stuff, but, you know, and it's not just the Russians, obviously. I mean,
right.
You know, there's the Koch brothers and the oil and gas, what I call King Kong, coal, oil, nukes, and gas. Steve, did you want to jump in?
Well, I think that when you talk about what the Russians did and didn't do, you got to be careful about not overstating certain aspects of it. It is true that they apparently, it's really, you know, I mean, I believe what I read in the Mueller report. Some people think it's all made up garbage. I don't think it's made up garbage. I think it's as close to a real record that an evidence trail that we're going to get. Because actually, you know, if you think about it, you know, we have all these this evidence of how elections are disrupted. But again, it's this corruption side where, like, where do you, you know, we have seen year after year after year, where does the evidence come from, you know, for people who have, like, access to, like, the cybersecurity tools that can actually really trace this stuff. And they may not be revealing it, but I know that those tools exist. And this is what they're saying. And so the thing is, that's in the election infrastructure, election, you know, administration department. When it comes to, like, you know, the Russians and other stuff, like buying Facebook ads and things like that, that gets really turned upside down, because actually the Trump campaign and their allies spent thousands upon thousands of dollars more, you know, times, you know, buying those exact same kinds of messages. And, I mean, if you really want to point to, like, who, you know, what marketing vector, communication vector probably elected Trump, the answer is Facebook. And it wasn't by you know, ads paid by Russians. It was the Republicans and their allies. And quite frankly, they used the platform much more smartly than the Democrats did, because it was an anti-establishment year, and they sent out tons and tons of messages from people who appeared like those that were targeted, because it has the most incredible micro-targeting based on psychological profiles of users, that every day you go on Facebook, you give your profile more data. And that's kind of what happened, you know, in those swing states. And I mean, you know, people can argue with that, but that's what I believe, and I've seen a lot of reporting in that way. But that's not the same thing as talking about, you know, election administration and election security. So I think we have to be careful about not overly saying Russia, 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 but pointing out, you know, how certain things are vulnerable, and certain recent examples highlight that vulnerability. I mean, it's not as if some of these systems weren't vulnerable in the same ways, right, before the Russian got involved.
But absolutely.
It kind of goes back to the work that Susan and John are trying to do, which is really, like, you know, where does this land? Well, we need evidence to legitimize who won. And that's kind of where I really keep going back to that, because, I mean, where else, what are we left with, right?
Okay, so exactly
why we're such big fans of valid images, because they help to verify the election, and hand in hand with paper ballots, if you can post the ballot images of every vote cast in a county on election night, and the public can see those images and then be able to compare them to the paper ballots, you've gone a long way towards people being able to manipulate the paper ballots, manipulate the black boxes, manipulate the voting machines. So that's why that's one of our big issues and causes is ballot images. And people try to dismiss those, saying they can be hacked. But if you put them together with the paper ballots, it's the redundancy that makes it so incredible.
Other. Yeah.
John Brakey, give us your report now from North Carolina.
I
appreciate it.
State number 13 or 14 that we've been in since the last 16 months. You know, we're really kind of focusing now on swing states. North Carolina is that kind of state. It's on the verge of changing their voting equipment as of December 31st this year. All DREs in this state will be outlawed. And right now, 37% of the state is already digital that produces ballot images. And chances are another 30 or 40% will be set up and ready to go before the November election of next year, and also the primaries. And you know, when we go into a state, you know, me and Susan, being both of us have great rear view mirrors and been doing this ever since, you know, the early 2000s, what we do is we generate a track condition report that before we go in and ask questions, we already know the answers to them. And that's where, you know, I'm going to let Susan jump in here real quick and explain the conversation that she had about the Secretary of State about how ballot images work in this state and why we can't get them. So, Susan, you know, I don't want to give hearsay, so I'll let you explain this.
North Carolina has a very right-wing legislature, but it has a Democratic governor. Is the Secretary of State a Democrat or a Republican?
I don't know, Harvey. I'm sorry. Do you know that?
Well, okay, well, go ahead.
I'm not sure.
Well, I would say I don't know if it's a Secretary of State's Republican or not, but she really told Susan what was going on. Her staff did, but the state is an election board scenario, okay? And the governor is five from the election board, and it's 3-2. Three Democrats to two Republicans, and the system is coming through the State Board of Elections. So there's a lot of things that are done that are, you know, part of a top-down system, which is not so bad of a system. I'm kind of pleased with it because the public oversight is made up of two different parties that appoint people to watch this thing very carefully. And there are certain advantages to that. And it's a system that's changing because this state has only had a Democratic governor now for 2 years. And and they do a lot of things right, like they have same-day voter registration. But they may have traded off for that and done something very evil. Okay?
Right. And that's
Susan explained.
Yeah. Right, which this actually is really startling that I'm about to tell you, but the reason I called is the state was to just find out what their policy was on ballot images. Were they requiring the counties to preserve them? And so what she told me is that, yes, she said the counties have to preserve ballot images and the paper ballots because it's required by state and federal law. And she said, but they're secret. Nobody can see them except by court order or order of a county board of elections or state board of elections. And the reason they're secret, because I kept asking her questions, of course, and this is the startling part, Harvey, is that each ballot has a unique identifier on it that allows election officials to see how each voter voted. And I actually found out from a poll worker the exact process that they go through to do this. It's not for Election Day ballots because they don't have same-day registration on Election Day. But for the early voting ballots and the vote-by-mail ballots, which is at least 50% of the vote in North Carolina, they are identifying how you vote when you vote, which flies in the face of everything that an election's supposed to be. We didn't just find that out. Marilyn Marks, a great election activist, 2 years ago went to Mecklenburg County and tried to confront this issue, and they said they knew it was against the state constitution, but they weren't going to do anything about it, and she'd have to take it to court. But I don't think the voters in North Carolina know that their election officials know how they voted, and of course, if the election official tells anybody else, then anybody else can know. So
that's really strange. Let me just jump in here because I was just in Denver, where I was looking at they were doing a couple different kinds of audits, and one of the audits that they have there, it's their regular audit. They actually scan each piece of paper twice, each paper ballot twice, and they put. It comes out of an envelope, and it's a vote-by-mail state, and they put a number on it, and then they use that. They scan it a second time, and they actually add it up, and those ballots are public. See, they separate the ballot from the envelope, which identifies who put it in there. And then it goes into this giant pile, if you will. But so it's a very strange rationale that you're stating here that they're giving you. I mean, what you often get, you run into this as an activist all the time. I get run into it as a reporter all the time. Is you run into explanations that don't make sense. They just said sort of like a rationale to say no, right?
Yes. Well, and I left out one step of her rationale, which is because they have same-day voter registration, that they need to be able to prove if somebody registered twice. You know, in other words, somebody could run to one polling place and register and then run to some other place and register. And so this entire sort of evil scenario is built around something that should be good, which is same-day voter registration. So from that, they decided that they had to identify the voters so that they could go back and see if somebody voted twice. So it's, but you're right, Steve. I mean, it's a really convoluted rationale, and it is completely runs counter to everything in this. You know, voting's supposed to be a secret process. Think of the ways that that can be used to manipulate a person or coerce a person.
Well, quite frankly, it doesn't really make sense. But I don't know enough about it. It's just something about it doesn't make sense.
Well, and then co-worker confirmed it and described the entire process, which is, well, maybe we don't have time for that, but it's short, but it's sort of interesting. Yeah, do you want to know, or should we save that for another time?
No, it's not.
So you're the voter. You guys are the voters. You walk in. You walk up to the electronic poll book. They don't have voter ID in North Carolina, but you have to give your address and some other identifying information. They find you in their system. They do a printout, and they hand it to you to look at to verify that everything's correct. And then once you verify it, you take it to another table. They then find your correct ballot style. And they bring the ballot out. They scan your the piece of paper that you brought over with all your information on it, and the computer assigns that piece of paper with all your information on it. It assigns it a number so that now you have your information with your number on it, and then they handwrite that number on the paper ballot.
Well,
and at the end of the day, and then they print that out. They print out the new printout with all your information and the number on it. They put all those printouts in a folder. And that folder with all the information and the ballot numbers, unique identifiers, which is also in their voting system certification standard, says each ballot shall have a unique identifier. They take that back to the election board. So it's pretty amazing, don't you think? I think it's amazing.
I know enough about stuff in different states. That is a method of authenticating voters that really goes right up to the line of voter suppression. It's insanely complex. It doesn't need to be that complex, and it looks like it was put in place probably if it was put in place since 2012, which I bet it was when the Republicans took over in that state. It was probably done so with partisan overtones because North Carolina used to be the most progressive and efficient, you know, election administration state in the South. So I don't know what to tell you except that this is the kind of stuff that really is where the rubber hits the road.
And maybe that's why, and, you know, because I was in congressional district number 9, that's why I came to North Carolina, because of that race. Because it was ballot harvesting and ballot stuffing. That's something that has me concerned because we know that the voter database is vulnerable. We know that it's manipulated, okay? And so now we know that this is going on. And you know, I'll say this, is that in these counties, the voter turnout was extremely low, that some precincts didn't have any voters. You know, that's outrageous. And people are angry that the guy who did this has been doing it for years. And the communities we're working in were tri-racial communities, American Indian, blacks, and whites. And you know, they're very sensitive to all of this going on. And a lot of people down there in the county are starting to join the Mark Twain Party, you know, the party that believes that if elections made a difference, they wouldn't let us do it. And what concerns me, if we don't work together, if we don't find solutions like transparency, if we don't make elections transparent, trackable, and publicly verified, more people may be walking away from the franchise. You know, I was in a meeting in 2006 in Chicago, me, Kennedy, Brad Freeman, and a whole bunch of us, and we were dealing with the lawyers from the DNC. And their biggest concern back then is that if people believe what me and us were all saying, that they would quit voting. And we're seeing now in this country that, like in the 2016 election, if not voting was a presidential candidate, that portion would have won by a landslide. They got 44. What did Trump, Hillary get? She got 28%, then, if you break it that way. Trump got 27. Figure that out. I mean, Trump wins. But what's worse is, in 1932, another guy won, and he only had 34%. He did better. And if we don't fix this system and prove elections are real, and what we're trying to do is using these ballot images is a very powerful way of doing that. Is to be able to go ahead, like Susan was saying, is to prove to the American people, and we're putting together a program that by precinct, anybody could verify their precinct by doing some simple methods that we're coming out with that we'll have in video in the meantime. But getting back to North Carolina, you know, after Susan was told, of course, we're saving all this stuff, I went out there and found out people saying to me, well, why would I do that? I have the originals. Oh, we're saving the write-ins. You know, when the reality is you cannot pick and choose what you're going to save. It's federal and state law that you're going to have to save this. Doing the other part. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm done.
Oh, yeah. No. I was just adding to what you're saying. Didn't mean to interrupt. Yeah, the attorney at the state said that the counties were saving all the ballot images. But what John's found out at working at the county level, which is so great about what John is doing, being on the ground in these different states, there's nothing like it. And he's finding out that that's not the case. The state may think the counties are saving all the ballot images, but in fact, they're only saving the write-ins. So if the state is, she told me, the deputy counsel, whatever her title is, the deputy general counsel for the North Carolina Board of Elections, Caitlin Love, said that they have to save the ballot images according to state and federal law. So
yeah, this is Steve. I don't, you know, my understanding is that, you know, is that these scanners, these optical scanners that basically, you know, look at, you know, ink marked or hand marked paper ballots, or they take a look at a computer generated ballot summary. They use optical software to analyze the votes and then, you know, send that information to the tabulation stage. So it's not as if you can, like, turn that off for, like, some votes and have it on for others. It's either
that's
on
right,
or it's
Steve.
Off. In most
that's
cases,
right.
It's right. On. I mean, you know, the thing about this is it sounds like, you know, anybody who's listening to this still is like, you know, yeah, we're really in the weeds here, but what are we really talking about? We're really talking about what's the believable evidence. And, you know, the thing is, you know, so, I don't know what the state of North Carolina's voter registration systems are. They're probably okay. But if you take a look at what, like, John is saying, what Susan is saying, you've got these strange obstacles for people to transparency to people who are voting in polling places. And yet, you have this process where there's a lot of opacity, you know, with voting by mail. And, gee, guess what? That's where, you know, people had their paper ballots hijacked in North Carolina's 9th Congressional District, and that's why there's a do-over election. And it all sort of fits, you know, into a partisan run system. You know, if certain people are more likely, or demographics are more likely to vote by mail versus in person in polling places, and that breaks down along party lines or racial lines, which in the South is party lines, well, there you have it, right?
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of state by state. Everyone's a little bit different. I mean, do you guys agree, disagree?
Yeah.
Well, given the status, given what you've found, North Carolina is a critical swing state. So, John Breaking, let's talk to you because you're there right now. Given what you
I would say this is I'm optimistic, but go ahead, Harvey, ask the question.
Well, given what you have found,
and what Steve and Susan have said here. How easy or difficult will it be for the Trump people to steal North Carolina either through voter suppression or flipping the vote count in 2020?
Well, that's I don't know what their game plan is, but you know it's going to involve the voter database.
We all know
it's going to involve micro targeting,
and
it's going to involve knowing how we can get to you. And if you like the color pink, can we convince you that we're pinkies too, so you should vote with us? Because you know we
No, no, no.
You know,
I'm not talking persuasion here. I'm talking voter theft. Let's say that people of North Carolina legitimately come out and want to vote for the Democrat in 2020 and get rid of Donald Trump. How easy would it be for Donald Trump and the big money and the Russians behind him to flip North Carolina, either through voter suppression or through flipping the vote count or a combination of the two?
They got one of the best.
That's an impossible question, don't you think, John? How would we know that exactly?
We don't.
Right.
That's the whole problem, because we need elections that are verifiable, and without being verifiable, I don't trust any election. You know, I see anomalies all the time where the rule of large numbers fail, and you know, I have not really analyzed these results. There's so little of them because nobody's really wanted to really vote in this primary, which is interesting. And but I would say this is that that's what we're here for, is to really dig deeper into that. So I'm really going to hold my thought back because we're not done meeting with people and to see if the our next phase is to educate, then maybe agitate. And if we cannot get them to follow the law, then we will start getting ready to litigate. That's what we do. Investigate.
So listen,
you know,
we're almost out of time, and literally and figuratively. This is my concern, okay? We are seeing more and more evidence that the Russians and others.
And the Chinese.
Hacking,
and the Chinese and whoever else.
Yeah, I mean we're just like a beached whale here, and you know we're being picked apart. And the
can I say one positive quick thing? I know you want to summarize because we're almost out of time, but there's a letter on the Florida State Supervisors of Elections website, and may I read just three sentences of it?
Yeah, but quickly, please.
Okay, quick. 1 year ago, while Florida senators were painting a grim picture of our elections community readiness, Matt Masterson, the senior cybersecurity advisor for the Department of Homeland Security, said, quote, Florida is one of the most, if not the most, engaged state working with the Department of Homeland Security on securing election systems and infrastructure. And then he goes on to say that the state spent $17 million in the last year to install or contract to install threat detection and reporting systems, conduct specific training. So I won't keep talking,
right,
but it looks bad.
That's good. That is encouraging.
And we don't want people to think that we're trying to discourage people from voting based on this. We want people to know that we're trying to do, as the states are, I'm sure, we're also trying to do something about it by making elections transparent and trackable and publicly verifiable.
So listen. Thank you, Susan. That's very good. But your assignment, should you choose to do it, this is Mission Impossible, Mission Impossible. We are all 100% certain that whoever is supporting Donald Trump, be it the Russians, the Chinese, the Koch brothers, you know, the coal oil, nuke and gas industries, all those people are lined up. We have a reasonable certainty that Trump is going to lose the popular vote in 2020. The bottom line is we are all experts in election theft now, whether we like it or not. We are 100% certain that the people behind him are right now diligently figuring out how to steal this election if Trump loses or when Trump loses the popular vote. The question then is, how do we prevent it? That's the question. And, you know, we're almost out of time today. We've rambled through some of the stuff that's going on now. We don't need any more evidence. I don't think that people, however effective they were, did try to steal the 2016 election. Apparently they were successful. How do we prevent this from happening in 2020? John, I'll give you the quick, and then Susan, and then Steve, real quick.
Okay. hey, we know the solution is transparency, that we have to be able to have elections that are transparent and trackable, publicly verified. That's what we work for, and that is going to be our efforts. We are planning to possibly target 15 states, the swing states, and we're very concerned about the primaries, and that's where we're going.
Susan?
Well, I sort of summed up in a minute ago, so I'll agree with John. It's a huge challenge, and I don't know how successful we'll be, but we will keep on trying as hard as we can. Steve?
Well, I think that every election and every election system, you know, none are perfect. They all have plenty of flaws. They can be used by partisans, you know, in all kinds of ways that I would call microaggressions. And the only way you really win is you have to win big. You have to win with turnout that is a wave that is large enough that swamps the microaggressions. So Hillary Clinton won the national popular vote by 3 million, but lost the Electoral College. Obama won the Electoral College by 5 million and then 10 million votes and won the election. And so whatever it takes in those different states, and it's a different thing in all these different states, but that's kind of what it is.
All right. Well, we got to go state. Obviously, we got to go state by state. We have to compile what we've learned. There's no more question that whoever it was did try to hack or did successfully hack a number of states in this last election, and we can't let it happen again. I mean, that's the bottom line. John Brakey, people get a hold of you real quick.
Best way to get a hold of me is John Brakey, Brakey with a Y, a break, at gmail.com, and our site is auditelectionsusa.org.
Susan Pinchon?
Susan Pinchon at gmail.com, and we have a website at Florida Fair Elections Coalition, which is FFEC, F. Frank, E. Edward C., Florida Fair Elections Coalition.org.
And Steve Rosenfeld?
Yeah, well, my pieces are at independentmediainstitute.org. They're linked to all the places that publish them. And I'm at, you know, stephen@ind.media.
All right, listen, forewarned is forearmed. We know two things. A, they're going to try and steal it for Donald Trump, whoever they is. And B, the Democrats are going to be absolutely worthless, and we're going to have to deal with this ourselves. Thank you so much. You've been a great – I mean, this is so – mind-turning, but, I mean, the focus is there. We know what's coming at us. There's no surprises here. We've got to protect the coming election and make sure that what happened in 2000, 2004, and 2016 does not happen in 2020, where we can kiss this country and the planet goodbye. Thank you, crew in New York, so much. This has been Harvey Sluggo Wasserman here at the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. We'll be back again. I have pieces up, by the way, at Reader Supported News. Take a look, Reader Supported News. We'll see you next week in Solartopia.
Thank you, Harvey. Thank you.
Thank you.
Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're going to have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.